This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow a Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends, and thanks for joining us here in Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show to the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru, and this is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hello.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
I'm feeling like Batman, so if I start growling and asking you where you put the bomb, or why you don't have any friends, I apologize.
You're feeling like Batman, or you're sounding like Batman?
Yes.
Okay. So you're not feeling like your parents were murdered in an alley and now you're fighting crime in the middle of the night or whatever. You're not feeling like that, or you are feeling like that?
Well, sometimes I feel like that.
Okay.
When I have to talk about season 3 of the original series.
Oh, okay. All right.
Segue into, a lot of people have been clamoring that we talk about season 3 and that we ignore season 3. Well, we figured our first really season 3 focused episode will be the one where we reject most of its canonicity.
Yes. Yes.
So it's time for another episode of Standard Orbit Canon. Theme music starts, we see a fast-moving starfield. Episode's clips fly by the camera till one is stamped rejected and explodes, which fades into the Standard Orbit Canon logo as the theme music swells. Insert cannon fire sound. Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, because it's canon?
Yes, it's funny.
Oh, that works. That works.
I made a theme. I made an intro video, but because it's an audio podcast, I had to just describe it.
So there actually is like a video somewhere?
Yeah, sure. I totally made a video.
Okay. All right.
You'll just have to trust me.
How much does someone need to donate on Patreon in order to see that?
$500 a month.
Oh, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Directly to me, and then I'll make it. That's patreon.com/DrewStewart.
That's not real.
That's not real, as far as you know. But yes, we're going to discuss our canon, where we take all the episodes and we decide whether or not they're necessary for the story, or at least how we see the story of Star Trek.
Yes.
The original series.
These aren't necessarily episodes that we think are good or bad. They're episodes that we think would make the overall canon better if they were included or not included, which oftentimes is because they're good or bad, you know? It's a balancing act. It's like trying to maintain a certain level of quality while simultaneously trying to make something that makes sense on the whole.
Right.
Yeah.
So season 3 has 24 episodes.
Mm-hmm. Short.
Are we placing bets on how many episodes we're actually going to have in the canon when we're done?
Yeah. You know, I was looking over the list and, you know, when I was thinking about it initially, I'm like, I think there's going to be this many. And then when I looked over the list, I'm like, wow, I'm surprised. There's actually probably like twice as many.
Yeah. So judging from your past, you're thinking two?
Maybe a little higher than that, but we shall see.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, I was thinking the same thing. I looked through the list and thought the exact same thing. So maybe we're on the same page with the same episodes.
Maybe. Let's find out.
All right. The first episode in season 3 that was aired was Spock's Brain. I'm going to read the descriptions because some of these, not this one, but a lot of these episode titles are really vague.
Yes.
In Spock's Brain, Captain Kirk pursues aliens who have stolen Spock's brain.
Yes. I think we all know what this episode is. I think the reason why we all know what this episode is because everyone hates this episode or loves it for being horrible.
You know? Right.
So because of that, I say we ditch it.
Yeah, I Looking back on it, it is not necessary. Like, it's got the whole problem. I have a lot of problems with, let's gain the knowledge of an entire civilization, but it's only temporary.
Yeah.
Those kind of episodes, which is how this one, I mean, the Deus Ex Machina is a machine that basically lets McCoy do the impossible. I don't know. I just finished watching Ethics for Next Generation.
Yeah.
And it seems to be kind of similar. Oh, we could just regrow spines. That sounds like something that would be useful in the future.
There's nothing wrong with Ethics. The problem comes in the very next episode, where after ending Ethics with him struggling to walk and then turning to Alexander and saying, we shall do this together. Then in the next episode, he's just like, hey guys, what's up?
Oh, I haven't watched the next episode yet.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Spoilers, they never mention Ethics again for the rest of Star Trek. So, yeah.
You think they'd come up, you know, like Julian doing his physical examination of Worf when he joins the crew?
They're like, dude, like, wait a minute. They grew you a new spine?
Yeah. That's ridiculous. I have a genetically modified brain, and I think that's stupid.
Yep.
That's neither here nor there. Well, it's kind of there. The next episode shown was The Enterprise Incident, written by DC Fontana. Mm-hmm. The crew of the Enterprise attempts to steal a Romulan cloaking device. I like this episode.
Yeah, it's not a bad episode. And I mean, I guess it's what, like, the first time you see like the Klingon D7s or something like that, whatever they are and stuff. And, you know, I don't know. There seems to be enough stuff in here which is built upon in the future. I mean, not that you wouldn't know what was going on if this episode wasn't here, but it's decent enough that there doesn't seem to be really any reason to get rid of it.
And we don't really want to cut the episodes with Romulans in them in half.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like only having one Romulan episode. I like it. I like Spock going undercover as like a traitor. Mm-hmm. I like Kirk pretending to be a crazy person to cover up this secret mission. I like Kirk in the pointed ears and the jokes they make about his pointed ears. It also sets a stage for the next generation of with Spock and the unification and going undercover as Romulans. It's all kind of set up in this episode.
Yeah.
I think it's important to the future of the canon. I say we keep it.
Yeah. See, look at that. So far, we've kept half of the episodes of season 3.
Yeah.
It's not bad at all.
This is looking real good.
Yeah, maybe season three we fans. Were wrong about season 3. Maybe season 3 really is. Maybe it's the best season of the original series. Let's find out. I'm excited now.
All right, the next episode is The Paradise Syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
A mysterious alien device on a planet with a predominantly American Indian culture erases Captain Kirk's memory and begins a life with them as a member of their tribe.
Yeah. You know what I remember most about this episode? When Kirk gives CPR to, I think it's a kid.
Yeah.
And he uses his crazy new technique of pumping their legs.
That is this episode, isn't it?
Yeah. Because, I mean, that was, you know, that's how you do it, right?
That's how Kirk does it.
That's how they did it back in 1966, I guess.
But I was hoping that it would be, I am Kirok.
Oh, yeah, there's that too.
Yeah.
I think we can...
There's a lot to remember about this episode, but a lot to forget.
Yeah.
Again, another thing I have problems with in all of Star Trek is not only gaining knowledge of things and then forgetting them, but forgetting knowledge you already had.
Mm-hmm.
And that being the plot. Like, oh, Kirk hit his head and now he can't remember who he is. It is nice to have Kirk have like a legitimate relationship with someone.
Mm-hmm.
Like his relationship with Mirame is sweet and kind, and it's heartbreaking in the end. But it's not really Kirk's falling in love with this person. It's Kirok. It's a different character.
Yeah.
So I don't think that this affects Kirk in the long run, that it would be necessary to keep it around.
No. Get rid of it.
Okay. It's gone. All right. The next episode up is "And the Children Shall Lead." The crew of the Enterprise rescues a group of children stranded on a planet along with their evil imaginary friend. No.
No. Yeah, no, I can't even tell you which kid episode this is, but it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, going into this thing, I was like, maybe I should rewatch some of season 3 so that I know which episodes are which, so that I know, you know, which ones we need to keep and which ones we need to dump. But then thinking about it, I'm like, okay, if I don't remember an episode, it's not important enough to keep. You know, so who cares what these episodes are? No.
Right. That was kind of my thing, too. But this is the one with the creepy ginger kid. And that's all you really need to know.
Okay. All right.
The next episode is there in truth no beauty? ? The Enterprise travels with an alien ambassador who must travel inside a special black case because his appearance causes insanity.
Mm-hmm.
This is the return of Diana Muldaur.
I mean, I kind of like the concept here, you know, and the idea that, you know, it's kind of like a, what is it, like a Cthulhu thing, you know? And it's sort of one of the few times on the original series where they did, well, in all of Star Trek, really, where they were like, look, here's an alien race which is so alien to us that, like, we basically don't even understand it, you know? And that's kind of cool.
It is cool.
That being said, you know, is it a good episode? I don't know. I mean, does it have anything in there that we need? I don't know. So I'm kind of on the fence about this one. What do you think?
I'm on the fence, too. There's nothing really bad about it, but there's nothing really lasting. You know, we've got the... Spock sees the Eye of Madness and goes crazy, which is all right. And we get the whole, you know, reveal that his caretaker is blind and she's got the cool sensor dress and stuff. But I mean, it's not really necessary to like continuity.
It's not necessary to continuity, and it's not such a good episode that it, you know, is really worth keeping. But then again, like, I mean, you know, thinking about it now, there is a lot of stuff in there which conceptually is kind of worthy of inclusion.
Yeah.
So maybe we should just keep it.
Yeah, we why will. Not?
All right, we'll keep it. We'll keep it. See?
All right.
Look at that. We're at, what, 2 for 5 now? It's 40%.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I mean, if that was a baseball player and that was their percentage for batting, they would be in the Hall of Fame. They would be like considered to be the best player of all time.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's silly.
It's really hard to hit a baseball.
I understand that. I've tried. Yeah. Believe it or not. Okay, the next episode is Spectre of the Gun. For trespassing on an alien world, Captain Kirk and his companions are forced to reenact the famous shootout at the OK Corral with themselves cast as the losing side.
This isn't a bad episode.
I
mean, I'm not saying that it's a good episode, you know? I mean,
you get some ingenuity with them trying to make, you know, the knockout gas with the chemicals in the bar. But the whole cheapness of the sets...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which supposedly is justified in story.
Yeah.
And Chekhov falling in love with a person he knows is an illusion.
Yeah.
Is frustrating.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not, you know, a huge defender of this episode or anything like that. If you're not a fan, that's fine. We can cut it out. But, yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. It's one of those on the fence things. Like it would, you know, be the first to go in the second round of cuts, but we'll keep it around.
All right, cool. So now we're back at 50-50. Wow.
This is not going the way we expected.
Yeah.
Next up is Day of the Dove, an alien energy-based life form that feeds on negative emotions such as fear, anger, and hatred, drives the crew of the Enterprise into brutal conflict with the Klingons. I like this episode.
Yeah, I like it too. And, you know, being a Klingon episode and having, I forget which of the three Klingons is in here. Is this
Kang? I don't
remember
either.
I believe it's Kang, if I'm not mistaken. You know, that's kind of necessary, especially if we're looking way down the line at Deep Space Nine and Voyager.
This is true.
It's nice to have that connection, even though it's not necessary. It's nice. So, yeah.
It's Kang.
I think that we should definitely keep this one. Look at that. Look at that. 4 for 7. Oh, my God.
We are in over 50%.
It's still early. Let's see.
Yeah, it's very early. This is episode 8.
Yeah.
For the world is hollow, and I have touched the sky. As McCoy discovers he is dying of an incurable disease, the crew of the Enterprise rush to stop an asteroid from colliding with a Federation world, only to discover that the asteroid is, in fact, a disguised alien vessel. They find an entire civilization living in the ship, who believe they are actually on a planet, and a dictatorial oracle who forbids any attempt to discover the truth.
Yeah, you know, the description of a lot of these episodes is a lot better than what I remember. You know, it's kind of weird, and this seemed to happen a lot. You know, like, reading, like, These Are the Voyages and stuff like that, there's, like, you'd read these concepts and everything, and you'd be like, wow, that sounds insane. That sounds like, you know, a $200 million blockbuster. How could they have thought that they'd pull it off? And then you read descriptions of the episodes that actually aired, and you're like, wow, they actually did that. They actually did something that's that high concept. And then you watch the episode, and it's like, it's just a bunch of people sitting around a set talking about these things in reality. It's weird. But, I don't really think this episode works. I don't think there's anything in it which needs to be there. I think it would be better if it wasn't there.
It's kind of a shame to lose the, you know, one of a very few McCoy-centered stories, but it's not, it doesn't affect him in any way. It's not like they go back to Yolanda in Star Trek III as McCoy is, you know, struggling with having Spock's Katra or anything.
Well, I think McCoy would be the first to tell you that, you know, some things which are good for you are only good in moderation. So, you know, he'd probably be okay with us cutting this episode out in order to keep up his overall quality.
Okay, we'll cut it.
So now we're back to 50%.
I mean, if we keep this average up, we're this is going to be impressive. I think that that'll keep on average. I think we kept like 12 episodes per season.
Yeah.
Next up is the Tholian Web. Captain Kirk is caught between dimensions while the Enterprise is trapped in an energy-draining web spun by mysterious aliens. A sequel to this episode is In a Mirror Darkly, the second-to-last major story arc, the final season of Star Trek Enterprise.
Yes. Well, I think we have to keep this episode because, for one thing, it's actually pretty good. But then also, yeah, it becomes a sequel to, like, the best episode of Enterprise. So, wait, is it a sequel to it or is it a prequel to it?
It's a sequel if you go by the timeline of the Defiant.
This episode, okay, the Enterprise episode is a sequel to this, but a prequel to Mirror Mirror. Yes. Okay.
Right.
All right. So keep it for sure. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it has a lot of good character moments. I like Spock being put in charge and him and McCoy listening to Kirk's final command and that kind of stuff. So it's worth keeping more than just that one episode of Enterprise that doesn't really fit into its own continuity. All right, the next episode is Plato's Stepchildren. The crew of the Enterprise encounters an ageless and mischievous race of psychic humanoids who claim to have organized their society around ancient Greek ideals.
Yeah, I think we can get rid of this episode.
it's a shame to lose the cultural impact of the original airing of the episode with the first interracial kiss, but it's we're not looking at it from production groundbreaking things. We're looking at it from plot.
Yeah.
And no.
Right.
No.
Yeah, that's gone.
A little person riding Captain Kirk around like a horse is not. All right. The next episode is Wink of an Eye. The invisible, time-accelerated aliens take over the Enterprise and attempt to abduct the crew for use as genetic stock. No, thank you.
It's one of those things where, like, conceptually it's cool, and the way that it's done visually is actually pretty interesting, but on the whole, it's not a very good episode.
And if we get rid of it, keeping Blink of an Eye in Voyager is a lot more justified because the titles aren't confusing anymore.
I guess that's true. I don't remember what Blink of an Eye was in Voyager.
Blink of an Eye is the one where the Voyager comes in orbit of a planet, and the planet is so accelerated, like, you know, thousands of years ago, this star appeared in our sky, and then eventually, like, it keeps cutting back to the planet, and every few minutes, the planet's a couple hundred years in the future, and they eventually discover space. Right.
Yeah.
It's Voyager's Interstellar, yes.
That's cool.
All right. Next episode, number 12, The Empath. While visiting a doomed planet, the landing party is subject to torturous experiments to test an empathic race. Not an emphatic race, an empathic race. They're not very emphatic about things.
Yeah.
I don't recall anything about this episode.
I vaguely remember it, but I think the fact that neither of us really are familiar with it suggests that it's not worth keeping.
Right. Definitely. Number 13, Elan of Troyes, which I can never pronounce. Captain Kirk hosts a spoiled princess who must bring peace to a star system at war. As impressive as it is how many times she changes her costume, it's not impressive enough to keep in continuity, because let's cut as many spoiled brats as we can out of this continuity.
Mm-hmm. The only real interesting thing about this episode is it's the first time and one of the very few times in Star Trek history where an episode or a movie was written and directed by the same person.
Oh, yeah. John Meredith Lucas. Nice.
Yeah. But not anymore.
Nope. It's gone. All right, Whom Gods Destroy. Captain Kirk visits a mental health facility and confronts an insane starship captain who believes he is destined to control the universe.
Okay, this is the one with Garth of Izar or whatever.
Yes, yes.
And it's like the basis of Axanar and all that stuff, right?
Right.
And I know there's like a lot of people who like talk about Garth and they're like, he's the best. This is so awesome. Right?
Right.
Yeah, why do they do that? I don't understand.
Well, in this episode, we don't really get to... Because Kirk looks up to him is why so many fans are fans of Garth.
Okay.
And someday we'll have Alec Peters on and he'll explain to us
everything
about it.
Yeah.
But I think it's because Kirk looks up to him that we're supposed to look up to him, or that a lot of fans look up to him.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, in this episode, he's possessed.
Yeah, so it's one of those things, like, you never get to see the real him.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But the idea of Kirk having a hero
is
a big deal, and I can see that. I know we're probably not going to go through fan productions and decide whether or not they fit into our canon.
No.
We
no.
might. No, probably
that's,
not.
That's opening a whole can of worms.
We'll have to read all the books and all the comics.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. They never mention Garth again. If we're not keeping the fan productions and stuff, then let's get rid of it.
Yeah, there's just not enough in the episode itself to justify keeping it.
It is like the only other time we see an Orion slave girl.
Yeah, that's okay. We don't need to see that. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Kirk kisses green women. That's the thing that he does that he never, ever actually does. And this is his only interaction with an Orion slave woman.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So our percentage is falling down.
Yeah, it happens.
We're at a 5 of 14.
5 of 14? Really? I thought it would have been higher than that still. Okay.
No, no, I think so.
All right.
We had a big run of throwing outs.
Yeah.
Number 15, let that be your last battlefield. The Enterprise picks up the last two survivors of a war-torn planet who are still committed to destroying each other aboard the ship. Isn't that spoilers?
Maybe.
That we don't know that they're the last two survivors of their war-torn planet?
I mean, I guess so. But, yeah. But, I mean, that's, I don't know. That, to me, isn't a big deal for this particular story. But, yeah, hey, I mean, this is, like, the one episode from this season which is actually, like, legitimately good, right?
Right.
So we should probably keep it.
And, according to Federation, the first 150 years, which I just finished reading,
uh-huh.
Their planet is the one that develops cloaking devices for the Romulans.
Oh.
Before they destroy themselves.
Then we definitely need to keep it, otherwise... That would have no impact on anything at all.
Because it all happened behind the scenes.
Yeah. That's cool.
All right. But I just thought that was neat.
Yeah.
So we'll keep that around. Because it's actually legitimately trying to say something.
Yes. Yes. It's very Star Trek. It may be the most Star Trek of all Star Trek.
Yeah, it's definitely what I would point to as being, this is what science fiction is about.
Yeah.
Obvious parallels.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the next episode, here we're getting into things where you don't remember what the titles mean. The Mark of Gideon. An overpopulated race of aliens abduct Kirk to solve their problem. I think this is the one where they make a replica of the Enterprise
mm-hmm.
underground.
Yeah.
And then try to convince Kirk that that he needs to, I don't even remember.
You know, there's actually some cool stuff in this episode. Like, I never remember which episode this is, but, like, the whole thing where you see, like, the overpopulated society and they're, like, literally, like, wall to wall. I mean, that's some pretty awesome stuff and, like, terrifying in a lot of ways. I mean, this is almost like a Twilight Zone episode.
It is. I mean, especially with the shots of Kirk seeing them in the windows. And he's just like, I don't know what's going on. My problem is logistically, with an overpopulated planet, you have the room to build an entire starship underground.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big-ass ship to just be, well, you know, we're going to trick this one guy. But to be fair, you could probably fit most of the corridors in a warehouse.
Yeah.
As long as you change all the numbers on the deck real quick while the elevator is going, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Then you could probably trick Kirk for a while.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, you know, you got to cut him some slack in that area. And on the whole, I would say this episode is good enough to keep.
All right. I mean, I don't have any problems with it. I just don't remember it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's keep it. It might be a hidden gem.
All right, the next episode is That Which Survives. The crew of the Enterprise visits an abandoned outpost guarded by a mysterious computer.
Well, the whole computer thing is your specialty, so you tell me.
I don't recall.
Yeah, I don't recall either, so I'd say let's get rid of it.
Let me skim through this this thing here. Yeah, this I think they're stuck on a planet, and then they see a woman... And it turns out that she's a computer. Yeah, no. Yeah, forget that. All right, the next episode is The Lights of Zatar. Strange energy-based alien life forms threaten the Memory Alpha station and the Enterprise crew.
Yeah. The only thing I really remember about this episode is that it's written by Sherry Lewis, which mm-hmm. is very weird. But that's cool. I'd say let's get rid of it.
Sherry Lewis, like Lamb Chop?
Yeah, yeah. Like her and her husband.
What?
Yeah.
I was joking. What?
No, yeah, it was written by
Drew clicks the link.
Her and her husband.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it is.
That explains, I don't know. I wish that that puppet from, Sulu's plant.
That was Lamb Chop?
Beauregard. I wish that was in this episode.
Or maybe Beauregard could have made a cameo on Lamb Chop.
Oh, that man. That would have
been cool.
As it Lamb stands, Chop's play along yep. takes place in Star Trek continuity.
As it stands, none of that happened, so I'd say let's get rid of it.
Okay. The next episode is Requiem for Methuselah.
Yes. Aired February 14th, 1969, Valentine's Day.
It's
the okay. only thing I remember about that episode.
Hear me out.
Okay.
Okay, so the thing says the crew of the Enterprise encounters an immortal human who lives as a recluse in his own planet. So supposedly this guy is, immortal. He's lived the life of a whole bunch of famous people on Earth and other places. But I think the key is he has an android companion that Kirk falls in love with because Kirk does. But Kirk is like really affected by her death at the end of the episode. Like really, really affected. And the end of the episode is like him talking to Bones and Spock about it, about how tore up he is. And then he just kind of falls asleep. And Spock walks over to him and, does like the Vulcan mind meld thing and just says, forget.
Yes.
And like that's how the episode ends. And I think for that moment, this episode is worth keeping in continuity. Because that shows the strong bond of friendship that Spock is willing to, like, erase part of Kirk so that he can be better. I don't know. I mean, that seems kind of harsh, like, oh, I'm going to erase part of you. But, I mean, that shows care and something you normally don't see from Spock.
Well, that's fair enough. All right. We can keep it.
All right. The next episode is The Way to Eden.
Yay, the Enterprise, brother, right?
Isn't that yes. The thing? Okay. The Enterprise is hijacked by a criminal doctor and his loyal, hippie-like followers who are attempting to find paradise. Also known as the musical episode of the original series.
Also known as the episode where Charles Napier plays a hippie, which is really freaking weird. But hey, this episode is terrible.
Yeah, it's real, real bad.
This is the one that everyone talks about, where they're like, they did space hippies.
Yeah, this is the third season episode that when people point to third season episodes, this is the one they point to.
They point to this, and they also point to Spock's brain. I think that those two are the two,
Yeah, but The Way to Eden is just no.
Yeah, I'd say let's get rid of it.
All right. The Cloud Minders. Kirk races against time to acquire plague-fighting minerals from a world in the midst of a civil uprising.
Yeah, this is one of those episodes where you hear the description and you're like, they did what? This sounds like something out of Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah. They go to a cloud city.
Yeah, and I'm like, where is all the, I'm like, and then you watch it and you're like, oh, they're just on the same set that they're on every week. Okay, well, yeah, maybe that's not that great. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't recall enough details about it to... I know the plot. I know what happens. And I know that people fall from great heights. But I don't see it being referenced later that we would need to keep it.
No, I don't think so.
All right. We're almost done. The Savage Curtain. Aliens force Kirk and Spock to battle illusionary villains in a test of good versus evil. This is the one where we get Abraham Lincoln versus Kalis.
Yeah. And even though you do establish Kalis here, it's a fake Kalis and it's a stupid Kalis, and I would say let's get rid of it.
You don't care for Abraham, floating Abraham Lincoln?
No, I don't.
Oh.
No.
I will not argue with you. Hey, look, story, Gene Roddenberry.
Yep, yep.
All right. Second to last episode, All Our Yesterdays. Kirk, Spock, and McCoy are trapped in the past on a world threatened by a Nova. And this is the one where Spock falls in love in the past because being in the past causes his Vulcanism to regress to the point where of where it was in the past, though the humans don't become like Neanderthals or anything.
Because that's how evolution works.
Right.
Yeah, I think we should get rid of this episode.
It's a shame to lose a Spock love story, but I think you have a lot of problems with that science there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And the last episode of season three is Turnabout Intruder, Kirk's consciousness. Kirk's consciousness becomes trapped in the body of a woman bent on killing him and taking over his command while inhabiting his body. Which the emphasis Wikipedia's.
As much as I love watching William Shatner play a woman playing Captain Kirk, and I do really love that, I don't think it's enough to justify including this episode.
So you don't think this is the series is all good things, like the perfect ending to a series?
No, I think that Star Trek VI is the series is all good things. But if we lose this, and since we lost all our yesterdays and the Savage Curtain and the Cloudminders and the Way to Eden, then, you know, Requiem for Methuselah is the final episode of TOS proper in our canon. Oh. And then it ends with that moment that you were talking about. And that's a pretty good out point.
That just gave me shivers. I like it.
Yeah. So Turnabout Intruder needs to go.
So it looks like we kept one third.
Hey, that's not bad.
Of season three. What was your guess? Or were you just did you not actually have numbers?
I was guessing like five.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was gonna be mine, five or six.
Yeah.
But we kept a couple on the fence ones, and I think that's what swung it up.
Yeah. See, we don't hate TOS season three.
No.
Okay, yes. Well, I do. Yes, I do.
But now we have a list of episodes we know we can talk about because they're okay.
Yeah.
All right. So our standard orbit canon for season three is the Enterprise incident. Is there in truth no beauty? Spectre of the gun. Day of the dove. The Tholian web. Let that be your last battlefield. The mark of Gideon. And Requiem for Methuselah. And I almost said Requiem for a dream. But that's different.
That's in Star Trek canon, too. It should be, anyway.
Yeah, we'll figure that out.
Yeah.
Something to do with being on a game show. I don't know.
Mirror Universe.
Of course. There we go. Takes place in 24 continuity.
Yes.
Well, that was our season three. Do you have the list of season one?
I don't offhand, but we're not done yet.
Oh,
we've still got a couple of other seasons of television to do and
that I have to watch first.
Yeah, the animated series. We need to go through the animated series, and then we need to go through the movies, and then we'll have our full list.
It'll be a while. I can't promise that I'm going to drop everything and watch the animated series.
Just watch one a day. They're only 20 minutes long.
Yeah, that's true. I could probably squeeze it in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So give me a month or two.
It's fresh Trek. It's fresh Trek that you've never seen.
It's Star Trek I've never seen. That's true.
Yeah.
I should be more excited about seeing it.
Yeah.
Okay. So now that we've done season three, we're going to jump into a quick little news segment to follow up on our episode on Orchie and the director of Star Trek. So...
I really like, I forget who it was on Facebook who came up with Star Trek Tachyon Drift. I think that's pretty good, you know?
Okay.
I mean, the big
and
joke...
Why are we calling it that?
Why is it Tachyon Drift? Well, we're calling it that because the director of Fast and Furious 3 through 6, as well as some other things, has been named as the director of... the new Star Trek movie, Justin Lin.
Yes.
He has a very interesting filmography. He's definitely best known for doing the Fast and the Furious movies. And for those people who don't get the Tachyon Drift reference, the third Fast and the Furious movie, which is the first one that he did, was called The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
before they decided to integrate the numbers into the titles. Well, no, because they'd already done Too Fast, Too Furious.
The
so
naming
they decided
scheme,
that was stupid, the, and then they went back to it.
Okay, the naming scheme for for the Fast and the Furious movies is completely all over the place and completely awesome. Probably the best of any movie franchise. There was, for those people who don't know, The Fast and the Furious.
Not directed by Jason Lynn.
No. Then Too Fast, Too Furious, which is awesome.
That's a good title.
Then The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, because this is like a side story with different characters that takes place in Tokyo, right?
Okay.
So then for the fourth one, it's like here's where they got the gang back together, and it was really sort of like returning to their roots. So they called it Fast and Furious.
Without the thes.
Right, which is, of course, very confusing, but also like, oh, that's clean. I like that. That's very clean. So then for the fifth one, at this point, people were just like, whatever, whatever. They were doing what they do with Star Trek. They're like, Star Trek 3, Star Trek 3. You know, this movie, Star Trek 3, and it's like, you have a Star Trek 3. Well, whatever. So for this one, people were just like, Fast 5, Fast 5, Fast 5. Okay. Are there five people? We don't know. Like Ocean's 11, Fast 5.
Galileo 7?
I don't know. But whatever, it's called Fast 5. And I'm like, well, that's an interesting way to go with it. So what do you call the next one? And all the advertising and everything was like Fast and Furious 6. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Furious 6 is obviously what you would call the next one, Furious 6, right? It just makes sense. And all the advertising, all the posters are like Fast and Furious 6. And I'm like, this is so stupid. This is, I don't even know what's going on here. And I sat down in the theater to watch it, and they have their little opening title sequence. And I was sitting there with Brandon, my co-host on Off Topic, and then the title comes up on screen, and it says Furious 6. And I'm like, yeah! And I like stand up and start like yelling at the top of my lungs. It was easily the highlight of my time in a movie theater in 2013. They're messing it up with this new one. They're calling it Furious 7. But who knows? They could change that. You know, I don't know where you go.
And 7.
And 7. You could do and 7. So, yes. Yes. if nothing else, we know that we're going to get a good title out of this movie. Because Justin Lin knows how to do titles.
And Justin Lin isn't directing 7. So that would be why the title isn't any good.
Exactly. Right. So, yes, he's directed 3 through 6. You know, 3 and 4 are not good. But 5 and 6 are very good. You know, 5 in particular is a very solid movie. It's very fun, kind of over-the-top action. Sort of like imagine Ocean's 11, but with really, really elaborate car sequences.
Now, see, when you describe it like that, that gives me shivers.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And there's a lot of people who are like, this is so fake. And it's like, yeah, yes, it is totally fake.
Yes, it's called a movie.
Yes, it's the most movie a movie can be. But I kind of like that. And, you know, it's not like he's beholden to this style. There's a couple of movies which he made before this which I haven't seen. One was Better Luck Tomorrow, which is kind of a little indie that he did, which was very critically acclaimed. I remember when it came out, Roger Ebert gave it like 4 stars and stuff like that. And that's sort of like put him on the scene. And then he did Annapolis, which is a little drama with like James Franco and someone else, which is apparently horrendously bad. I don't know. Oh. I haven't seen it. And then he started making these movies. But he's also done TV, which is kind of interesting, too. He directed 3 episodes of Community, including the first paintball episode, which I know everyone considers to be really good, Modern Warfare. Mm-hmm. And now he's directing the first 2 episodes of season 2 of True Detective. Which, you know, I mean, we haven't seen yet because they haven't been made yet, but season 1 of True Detective is like some of the best television ever. And, you know, they've got the same writer on board. And, you know, the thing to me, even though I haven't seen his Community or his True Detective, the thing to me which really stands out is, you know, there's a lot of people who consider Community to be the best comedy on television, and there's a lot of people, probably including myself, who consider True Detective to be the best drama on television. And the fact that the producers of both of those shows are like, you know what, we're going to get Justin Lin in here to make sure that everything goes according to plan and, you know, gets our vision to the screen properly or whatever. You know, we're going to trust this guy to get our vision to the screen. That says a lot.
Yeah.
So...
And it shows a variety. That's my thing, is everybody's just like, oh, there's going to be Fast and Furious, Star Trek. It's like, look at most directors. Most directors don't stick to the same genre. They direct what they're unless they're a writer-director, which he isn't.
No, he's written, like, he wrote the little indie thing, but that's pretty much it. Yeah.
He's not writing Star Trek III, even if Orshi is or isn't, depending on who's fighting today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Orsi has been sending some mixed signals, I guess. He's like, I'm producing, nothing more, nothing less. And then 2 days later, he's like, the new story is being written by Payne and McKay and myself. So yeah, and you know, there's the other thing is that Orsi has worked with Lin before. There's a new TV show on, I believe, CBS right now, which is called Scorpion, which I haven't seen. But Orsi's a producer on it, and so is Lin, because Lin directed the pilot. And in regards to that, in regards to Lin's involvement in the franchise, Orsi posted on Trek Movie, "We had a great time together on the pilot for Scorpion. He made it look twice as costly as it was. He is a pro and a gentleman. Trek is lucky to have him."
Now, that would mean that... I've seen the climax of Scorpion because people were making fun of it.
Really?
So that would mean that the climax of the first episode of Scorpion is the only Jason Lin Beyond trailers that I've seen.
Okay.
And while the premise is the dumbest thing I've ever seen, which is that there are planes that all of their, like, the control tower at an airport, like, all of its memory banks have been erased by, like, some hacker. But all of the planes have backups of them. So they need to, in order to land all the planes, they need to get that backup off of a plane. So they get a Ferrari or some fast car, I don't know. And they drive down the runway and have the plane, like, not land, but just, like, skim on top of them. And they dangled an Ethernet cable out the bottom of the plane so that they could plug it into a laptop so that they could download the backup so that they could then upload it to the towers so that the plane that was already 20 feet off the ground can then land.
Okay.
And there's no such thing as wireless, and there's, I don't know, there's a lady dangling by an Ethernet cable off the bottom of a plane. And I don't know about you and your familiarity with Ethernet cables, but those twisted pairs are not going to... The twisted pairs will keep, sure. But those connectors at the end, they're not staying.
Yeah, yeah.
They're popping right out.
Well, you know...
Anyway, but it looked great.
And if that's what was in the script, you know?
Yeah.
Then, you know, if he was able to successfully bring that to the screen, so...
It looked great. It looked exciting, even though I was watching it because I read that it was the dumbest climax ever. And I didn't know at the time who Justin Lin was or any of this stuff.
Oh, okay.
I was like, I kind of want to watch the whole episode.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm definitely going to watch it. Yeah.
So, yeah, Justin Lin. I'm excited to see what he can bring to the table. If he brings anything but being able to competently put a script on the screen.
Yeah.
Which, at least he has directorial experience.
That's true.
I mean, even if it is we're taking an Orsi story and we're putting it on screen, and now we're just taking an Orsi story and putting it on screen, at least it's going to... I mean, Orsi's unproven. I'm sure that he would have been able to figure it out. But we've got a guy who already knows how to do that. He knows how to take these words and make them reality.
Yeah, and he is having some story input. I mean, someone asked, like, hey, is the Shatner cameo still in the movie? And Orsi's response was, I don't know yet. We haven't talked about that with Justin yet.
Well, I would hope that it would be one of those things. Like, if they had asked me to direct Star Trek III, and they were just like, oh, we want to do this Kirk cameo thing, and I would refuse to direct it. I would just reject that scene flat out. So it's kind of nice that they are taking the director in, because the director may calm down some things that the writers may put in because they're stupid.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. It's cool, but yes, I mean it's cool to think that, you know, Star Trek is now in the hands of someone new, and we know, I guess more than anything, that we know who that person is, you know. And I've read a lot of people online who are like, Star Trek fans are such nerds. Like, who? Because now, of course, the big question is like, well, what's going on with the script, you know? And they're like, do you do this with any other movie? When they say there's a new Captain America movie coming out, are you like, who's writing the latest draft of the script? And it's like, maybe
yes,
maybe some people do that, some people don't. You know, for me, I guess my thing is like, we probably should, you know, because otherwise you're just like blindly saying like, well, I'm going to watch it because it's Star Trek, which of course is true. I am totally going to watch it because it's Star Trek. And they could have said anyone was directing it, and I'd be like, yes, opening day, I'm here. But I mean, it's cool to sort of have an idea of who this is so that you can sort of understand where they're coming from with their art, you know? I mean, it is something that someone is trying to say. If it's like when we give up that, then we're basically just saying like it is a product, you know.
If it doesn't matter who makes the movies,
right?
It really doesn't matter. The movies don't matter.
That's true. Oh well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, it was fun talking about season 3 and Justin Lin today. Not combined, heavens no. But that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And so I was biased against it. And even when I started buying the two-disc collector's edition DVDs, I avoided buying any of the even-numbered movies.
Odd-numbered movies.
Earl Grey.
Like they stated in the end of the movie, you know, they thought he'd outlive all of them. And I'm like, yeah, that's what should have happened. We should have seen Data, like, in the, you know, 26th century, like, Data 5.0, whatever we call him.
To the journey!
You don't know if she's going to stab him or smooch him.
She's going to smooch him, of course. After dessert.
After dessert.
We all know what dessert means.
Warp 5.
Along with technology and along with trying to study the origins of a lot of different things that we've come to know in the original series and beyond, it's hard to try and deconstruct it without insulting what has come in all of the things that we know of being Vulcan Mind Meld.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
And my thought was, in the next scene, Crusher should have the body of the dead Klingon sitting on the back of her toilet holding a candle. You know, which she would only get to do after Lieutenant Yara's gotten to hold the dead Klingon up to her ear to see if she can hear the ocean.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Everything you would imagine would be in an opening title sequence for this show is in there. I think the shot that really does it for me, the shot that really pulls everything together, is when he dunks the basketball.
Melodic Treks.
So we do know an awful lot of people get associated with Vic Fontaine. He name drops to the nth degree about all the famous people that he hung around with. One of whom is Frank Sinatra.
Axanar, the official podcast.
When there's a possibility for something to be misunderstood or not clearly explained, it can potentially open up a big hole for a show, because people can end up going down a path that was actually not what somebody wanted to be done.
The 602 Club.
What are those Bond movies that you go back to time and time again because they just do it better?
First of all, Matthew, nobody does it better.
That's true.
It makes me feel sad for the rest.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Director for Xbox and Zune, Spreaker, SoundCloud, all kinds of places. Or you can just stream it from the website. You can visit trek.fm/podcast to get all the links. Let's tell everybody where they can contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on their favorite episodes of Season 3 that we threw out. I don't know about that. Just go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab on the left-hand column of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and our other listeners at our Facebook group, The Babel Conference. In social media, you'll find our Facebook page at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you out of orbit?
Well, you can find me right here on Trek FM doing commentary, Trek Stars, with my co-hosts John and Max. And you can also find me on commentarytrackstars.com, where I do commentary Track Stars off topic with Max and Brandon. And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
And you can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE, and on various other places around the internet. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you each week, and our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible's a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible's the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what do you have for everyone?
Well, I have a book called Star Trek, Captain's Glory.
Oh. I was hoping you found like a novelization of the Fast and the Furious books read by Vin Diesel.
No, no. Or he just says, like, I am Groot.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. This was written by William Shatner and Judith and Garfield Reeves Stevens.
You mean Judith and Garfield Reeves Stevens?
Did I not say that?
No, you did. But it was written by them.
Oh, yeah.
And Shatner kind of waved his hand at it and said, that sounds good.
Yeah, yeah, probably. That's my guess. It is narrated by William Shatner, though.
Okay. So he at least read it.
Yeah. The description says, during James T. Kirk's heroic 5-year mission as captain of the Starship Enterprise, a mysterious alien threat called the Totality commenced its stealthy invasion, intending to conquer the Milky Way galaxy as it had conquered the Andromeda. Now the time for secrecy has passed, and a war unlike any other has begun, one that threatens to destroy the Federation, first by bringing warp travel to an end, and then by absorbing all living matter into an unknown realm. And you can get this book for free since you listen to Trek FM.
That book sounds awesome.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. This gets even crazier. I'm sorry. Do you mind if I read the rest of this here?
Please. Okay. This is what I live for.
Twice before, Captain Kirk has encountered the Totality. Both times it took the beguiling form of Norinda, an irresistible alien who becomes the woman each person she meets most desperately desires. In his first encounter, Kirk almost lost the Enterprise. In his second encounter, he almost lost his child and watched in horror as the Totality absorbed Spock in its monstrous dimensional tendrils. But now Kirk faces an even more devastating personal challenge. The battle lines have been drawn, and he and his friend, Captain Jean-Luc Picard, are on opposite sides. After the events of Star Trek Nemesis, on the leading edge of Star Trek's future history, Captain's Glory depicts a Federation attacked from within on the brink of collapse, with Earth's own solar system an armed and isolated camp. Reunited with Dr. Leonard Bones McCoy and Chief Engineer Scott, Kirk must join forces with Admiral Catherine Janeway and the holographic doctor from the Starship Voyager in order to save Spock and expose the true nature of the Totality. With Captain William Riker and Commander Deanna Troi of the Starship Titan caught in the crossfire of the conflict between Kirk and Picard, and Kirk's own child poised on the brink of a startling destiny millions of years in the making, Kirk must prepare for his final encounter with the totality. But how can Kirk fight an enemy whose greatest weapon is love, and how can he triumph when the price of victory is the life of his only child?
Oh my God.
That's crazy.
I'm freaking out, you guys.
We should do
Captain's Glory.
Yeah, we should do that as our network wide crossover. You know, we could get literary tracks, Earl Grey, To the Journey in there. No Deep Space Nine though.
Yeah, that's what I'm upset about. I'm sure that there are some scenes that take place on Deep Space Nine.
Probably. Anyway,
they moved Deep Space Nine to Earth orbit for some reason.
Now you need to get that book on Audible.com.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Before you spend all of your money, if you've already used your free trial, before you spend all of your money buying Captain's Glory, there's another way you can keep us in orbit, and that's by supporting us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find a list of donation levels where you can get things like exclusive digital goodies, early access to episodes, access to our project manager, and even be listed as an associate producer for our shows. You'll also find out where the donations can go, places like covering the monthly cost of hosting and distribution, hiring an editor for our shows, and upgrading our equipment. Again, that's patreon.com/trekfm, so check it out. Man, a lot to get excited about. I mean, we kept a third of season 3. We're getting a third J.J. Star Trek movie. We know who's directing it now. And we now know what book that we all need to read.
I hope that Star Trek 13 is just an adaptation of Captain's Glory.
Yes.
That'd be awesome.
And I would be totally fine with that because it sounds like Kirk can be in it.
Yeah.
He's got another kid. I don't know. We can get Chris Pine to play his kid, maybe.
Yeah, that works. I like that.
All right. Well, everybody, have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landry.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.